everybody. Welcome back to another episode of You Haven't Seen That Podcast, or YHST for short. I, of course, am Isaac.
And I'm Alva.
And this is a show where we cover movies on the growing list of films that has people asking us a question. You haven't seen that? Again, an intermission edition. We will eventually go back. I've been saying that the past like five episodes, but we'll eventually go back to actually covering and breaking down movies that are on our list. And the list does keep freaking growing. I think we're up to like 178. Movies.
I think more. We just added some today.
Yeah. So one of these, you know, months or something like that, we're going to find a way to like, it may be like covering current movies every other week and then doing breakdowns. I don't know. Live production meeting. But for those of you who are just listening in the future, our present, we also live stream this, and Alva will tell you where you can live stream it.
YHST Pod on Instagram and TikTok.
But mainly live streaming on TikTok because it's more fun with the live streams. And for those who do keep on top of all that stuff, you'll notice that we, for one, didn't have an episode last week because the flu kicked our asses.
Literally.
Yeah. I got sick the week prior to that. And then Alva finally caught what I was giving out.
How dare you?
Yeah. And so fortunately for my cold and flu, I managed to kick it right in time for that respective week's recording. And then she unfortunately was feeling, like real hell. And I go, cool, let's take a bye week. And then we'll just sort of, you know, gather our thoughts and get everything together. And we just watched the Oscars, the 97th Oscar Academy Award today, hosted by Conan O'Brien, which was a ton of fun. We're going to talk about that a little more at the end, an abbreviated discussion, if you will, and kind of cover some of the wins. But first, we will kick off the episode like we usually do with some news. But before I do that, I want to give a quick reminder that if you like what we're doing, help support us, please, at YHST on Venmo. There you can buy us a bucket of popcorn, any novelty popcorn buckets, a coffee for Alva, some candy for me, any other snacks and who's it, what's it. We will always highly appreciate that. And now we get into the show. Oh, and after we do the news, we're going to get into three movies. Count them. Three.
One, two, three.
Three movies. Because, we had time to do that. We don't have any kids. We get to do fun stuff like this. So we will now keep you abreast and informed on all the things going on in Hollywood, movies, and entertainment with a simple segment that we call YHST News. Ooh, I think I got it down now. Sweet.
I joined in on that one. Yeah. Go.
Look at us. All right. Kicking it off, Amazon MGM Studios has struck a deal with longtime Bond producers Michael G. Wilson, Barbara Broccoli, giving Amazon creative control over the James Bond franchise. I just hope that they don't leave the franchise shaken or stirred. Har, 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 har.
The Monkey delivers Neon's second biggest domestic office debut. Organ grinder.
Kitao Sakura, best known for his work as a writer, director, and executive producer of The Eric Andre Show, as well as several episodes of Twisted Metal, will direct the Street Fighter movie set to release on March 20th, 2026. My only wonder is, of course, who are they going to cast that has a thigh thick enough to match Chun-Li? Because I'm a guy. Not me, Chun-Li.
Oh my god, I'm going to have BFY Chicks 2 has been announced to begin filming after Scary Movie 6 wraps.
I am actually excited for that. Yeah, it's a scary movie. It's going to be cool. Sources confirm that Kathleen Kennedy is stepping down as Lucasfilm president by the end of the year after 13 years at the helm. Although there is no clear frontrunner to replace her, it has been rumored that possible candidates include Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Kevin Feige, J.J. Abrams, and Emma Watts. May the Force be with us all.
John Lithgow has confirmed that he will be playing Dumbledore in the new Harry Potter series on Max.
And keeping my stuff in the Star Wars news, Star Wars Revenge of the Sith is returning to theaters April 25th for its 20th anniversary so that you sick bastards can relive the horrors of Order 66 on the big screen once more.
I want to see it.
I'm down.
I'm Still Here is a Brazilian film in 22 years to pass 4 million domestically.
Wow, nice. The live-action adaptation of the best-selling comic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin is expected to aim for an R rating, having fans ooze with anticipation. Yes, I wrote that cheesy-ass pun.
Cynthia Erivo will play Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical.
No punchline needed. And director James Cameron announced that Avatar Fire and Ash will begin with the title card stating no generative AI was used in the making of this film. When asked what their thoughts were on this, Skynet replied, I'll be back.
And in more tragic news, Michelle Trachtenberg, 39, yeah. Gene Hackman, 95, his wife, Betty Arakawa, 63, and Hector the Horse, age 12, yeah. passed away.
Yeah.
No definitive cause of deaths for either, but nonetheless, our hearts go out to their families.
Yeah, condolences to all that. Man, and the in memoriam for the Oscars were pretty sad. And consider yourself informed with some YHST news. All right, and now we get into our flipping movies. We're going to kick it off with some Paddington in Peru because it's the easier one to talk about, honestly.
Paddington in Peru follows Paddington and the Brown family as they visit Aunt Lucy in Peru, but a mystery sends them into the Amazon rainforest.
Amazon.
And up to a Peruvian mountain.
Peruvian mountains. The movie starring most of the same actors as the previous two films. And the previous two films were, I'd forgotten a lot about them, so I looked up some like recaps and clips, and Jesus, I forgot how amazing those movies were. Again, most of the same actors, except for the mom, Mrs. Mary Brown, who was originally played by Sally Hawkins, and she was replaced by Emily Mortimer.
Okay.
Sally Hawkins, she chose basically to film Wonka. She was Willy Wonka's mom. And I forgot how much heart, how much she's like the heart of the movie and how wonderful she is at playing a mother. Because if you remember her in Wonka, her relationship with Willy Wonka, with young Chalamet was like really crucial, you know, like a love so strong that he proceeded to do what he did, which is, you know, making the chocolate factory, if you didn't know. Why did I need to explain that?
Clearly.
But I was watching clips of Sally Hawkins as Miss Mary Brown. I was like, wow, she was so riveting is the best word for that. She was so riveting as this mother who was, you know, played the antithesis of her husband, who literally was like an insurance risk.
Like an
arbiter.
Like, yeah, they just assess risks. And it was kind of funny to see this whole book of all these risks. And not just like, this is what it is, but it was more like, this is what it is and detail of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, and I don't want to spend too much time on Paddington in Peru, compared to the other two, this one felt the most like a kid's movie. And Paddington Part 2, as mentioned in The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, is the perfect film. And a lot of people would agree to that. And I feel like I want to rewatch it. Again, I was watching clips and I'm like, damn it, it's so good.
It did make me cry at the end. But I feel like now that older I get, the easier I cry at things in movies.
I could see that.
Yeah. So I was not expecting it. And then also, I think when we went to go see it, I was already kind of like feeling my sickness in a way.
Oh.
So I'm just like,
You're just Delulu.
I was like, I think I'm getting sick. I'm not sure if I'm tired. But it was such a good movie. I didn't think it was going to be as good as the other ones. Because usually, once it hits like a sequel or even like the third one or something, it kind of misses the mark a little bit. But it was really good.
It wasn't a terrible movie. And the reason why I say it felt the most like a kid's movie was because it felt the most formulaic. Like, oh, this is what those kids' movies are supposed to be. Here we go. Plug in the thing. Here's a reason to go to Peru. Spoiler alert. You know, we'll use some of what everyone loved in the first and second film and just kind of shoehorn it into the third. But it worked. It worked. It was fine. I don't think it was like terrible, but it just didn't have, I don't know the quality, the integrity and the story writing as the other ones did. And really, like, again, Emily Mortimer did really good to replacing Sally Hawkins, but she just was no Sally Hawkins. Mm-mm. And I did not realize how important that role was. Everyone else was the same. The dad, the two kids, the mom, the aunt, the shop owner. They're all older. But what was so funny is in the other movies, there was a lot of focus on the kids loving having Paddington in the house because the dad was just like sort of absent-minded and the mom was, again, trying to be as involved as possible. But it's it was just weird because like the kids were there. There was a quick little synopsis or background. They covered them for a second, and then they're just literally like in the background in the rest of the movie. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I think the whole focus of it was where it was trying to like make this thing where I felt like the kids were growing up. They were more focused going to uni and stuff like that, or just like trying to find their things and not like teenagers, basically. Yeah. So then like the only one that isn't really much of a teenager is Paddington, because I feel like he's the only one that kind of still like talks to the mom and the dad and everything, and like doesn't really distance. But I think that's more of like the appreciation because they adopted him in a way.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, but it kind of gave like a little bit of the insight of like how the kids have grown. And of course, after a certain age, kids don't want to hang out with their parents. They don't kind of want to listen. They're too focused on like their studies kind of thing, or whatever they're doing, video games. So that's, I felt like they portrayed that part perfectly fine.
I half agree with you.
Okay.
Because they did, but like in a quick flash, but they didn't, again, they didn't settle with the characters enough. There was a lot going on. You know, they had to introduce, you know, new characters. Like Olivia Colman was playing this nun. Hayley Atwell was like this head CEO, but she just had a quick bit in the movie. And then most heavily Antonio Banderas, and then the girl playing his daughter, Carla Taus. Mm-hmm. You know, those are like Olivia Colman at least, and Antonio Banderas like played a really big part in this movie. And I felt like the two kids' screen time was taken away in order to give Olivia Colman and Banderas' characters. Again, it's a kids' movie, and we're going like really deep into it, but
yeah, I still feel like I'm just like, no, I don't see it that way, because the whole thing is Paddington is in an adventure to go find Aunt Lucy, yeah. And I think that's the whole point, where it's like, just like in any other thing, any other kids' movie, the main character gets separated from the main group and tries to go find his way, and then of course like the villain or the bad guy or whatever. No.
I'm not disagreeing with you wholeheartedly. It's just when the kids were there in the scene, they were literally just in the background. They had like five lines of dialogue and that was it.
Yeah, I guess.
But I mean, it's just something that I personally noticed. I think you could still take the kids to go see it and they would greatly enjoy it. They're not going to be like, ugh. But like as a parent, I think any parent or uncle or aunt taking their whatever kids, nephews, like, you know, you're not going to be eyeballing the clock to see when it's all done, but like some stuff is, the humor is charming. It's still there. I forgot how much I love Ben Whishaw, who voices Paddington, like how soft and polite and kind and silly and charming his voice is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just, I liked him a lot. And now to turn complete 180 from a kids movie to a horror flick. I know. So the movie's Hard Eyes, if you want to cover the synopsis.
All right. For the past several years, the Hard Eyes killer has wreaked havoc on the Valentine's Day by stalking and murdering romantic couples. This Valentine's Day, no couple is safe.
I was expecting you to do your, where do I have it saved?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. There it is. Forget it. I don't need to push the button. God damn it. You know, it's been a while. I'm like so out of practice. Also, I need a better prescription because I can't see the screen.
Okay, we'll get that.
There it is. It's the top. Okay. it's at the top left. Remember that for the future.
The future. Okay.
So I know we're really late on seeing this movie. We compromised seeing Love Hurts over this movie, which they both came out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. No, I think this one came out a week before. Love Hurts came out on Valentine's Day, but Love Hurts trailer was a little bit better than this one. We just thought this one was a little cheesier, so we're like, we kind of don't really need to see it until, well, we had time to fill, and then that's when we kind of just went to go see it.
But the reason why we even added, honestly, if it was bad, we would probably talk about it for like 2 minutes and then just see, like, don't see it. It surprisingly was
good.
I'm not gonna be like, it was so good.
No.
But it shouldn't have worked in so many ways, because it towed this middle ground. Mm-hmm. And I think you had said it was the in-between of Scream and Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And for those of you who maybe have already seen it, you might agree, because it was like very meta in its references and almost self-referential. One of the characters in here was a detective played by Jordana Brewster. And she's known in the Fast and the Furious movies as Paul Walker's love interest. And there's a moment in the movie where one of the characters goes, wait, you're Detective Hobbs and you're Detective Shaw? Hobbs and Shaw from Fast and the Furious? And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, what? You can do that? You can make those kind of references? So it was almost satirical. But yet, like, the movie kicks off essentially not taking itself too seriously with the level of, like, you know, the first kill of a slasher film. Mm-hmm. So it was, not to overuse the word, but it knew the formula. It was formulaic with slasher films, and it knew what to plug in. But yet at the same time, if it tried to take itself seriously, I think I would have been like, yawn.
Yeah.
But it, like, leaned into some of the absurdities, and then just it really towed this middle ground that I didn't know existed, which allowed me to enjoy it.
It was like a rom-com with, like, murder.
and there's a rom-com part of it.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't hate it because I don't mind these two genres. But put together, it's something different that only this director knew how to, like, make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish there was, like, another movie coming out, like The Revenge of the Hard Eyes or whatever, because I probably would go see that one too.
I can see this getting another sequel. The director, by the way, is Josh Rubin, who directed Werewolves Within, who's starring my TV girlfriend, Milana Vaintrub. And another movie, Scare Me, which is on Shudder. I saw a clip of it. I'm probably not going to see it, but I liked Werewolves Within a lot. So based off of those two movies, he has this this style where he knows, you can tell he's a fan of horror films. He's not going to be the next Damien Leone, but it's just so specific because he is like a comedian and an improviser. So, like, it leans more on, leans more on comedy. And
it kind of showed.
It shows big time in these movies. So I thought that was actually pretty cool. The other thing that made this movie work very well were the two leads, which is Olivia Holt, which you might have known her from Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, and Mason Gooding. I mentioned Scream. He's in the Scream requels. He's, is it Nutsdew? Who's the one that always comes up with the rules? He's their nephew.
Nephew,
right? Yeah. So anyways, Olivia Holt and Mason Gooding, like, they had this chemistry that I, one, did not expect for them to have. And it made the movie work, as well as them actually, you know, doing what I always say the horror films are supposed to do, which is take some time in building your characters before you throw them into the almost the ridiculous situations of horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that stood out to you, though?
The kills. I like the kills a lot. I don't want to give much of those away because they're pretty good. It also,
the trailer gave a lot away.
Yeah, it gave a lot away. But also, it kind of, like, how the Hard Eyes killer would be kind of in a way chasing them around and stuff, it kind of gave, like, if it was a fast pace, Michael Myers.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like Michael Myers mashed with Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. Like, it just, I don't know, it just gave me that vibe.
Three things. It was Ghostface mixed with Michael Myers mixed with Jason Voorhees.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, to overuse the word again, that fucking worked.
It worked.
It was so stupid. It shouldn't have worked. I remember walking out, I go, oh my God, that actually was fun.
It's like the new scary movie for, like, this generation.
Yeah.
In a way.
We'll see how it holds up to the actual scary movie. But yeah, like we mentioned before, the rom-com part of it, that also had enough emotional weight where you cared about these two characters. You know, not to the point where you're like, wow, they're the next, you know, whatever the name was in The Notebook. But
Noah and someone. I don't know the girl's name.
Ellie?
Yeah, there you go.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something like
that. Yeah, somebody had to correct me on that one. Going back to the gore, it wasn't like a Terrifier level gore porn, but it was safe to say it's kind of like in the slasher porn of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It was fun. It was funny. It kind of, like, you know, hurried along. And even though they had, like, a nice pace to it, there were these few moments where it actually managed to, like, slow down and sit with your two leads so you can kind of, you know, feel their chemistry, you know, let that simmer. And it did.
They did have good chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they've been in any.
I don't think either of them had a lot of projects under their belt, but this seems like a really fun one.
Because usually, like, when I notice two main leads, they're usually in, like, past projects together. That's, you know, that's how they get that chemistry. But for the fact that this, I also don't know, maybe because they're also, like, young, maybe they just kind of are within the same friend groups and stuff.
I'm not going to be PC about it. They're hot. They're really, they're good looking people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're two hot people and you're acting together, like, then chemistry is there. I love it. I liked it a lot. Listener Carlos already gave us a heads up that it was a good movie. So I was like, you know what? Carlos said it was good. He's my guy for movie reviews. I'm going to go see it. So we did. I think if it's streaming, check it out. I don't know if it's something I'm going to revisit during the Valentine's Day season, but
I think I would just watch it just like a background movie kind of thing, or if like I can't find anything good to watch, it'd just be there.
Or if you're like me and my sister Pearl, we tend to make most of our holidays Halloween. The mix in Halloween in there.
I mean, if more movies...
I'm looking forward to Easter.
If more movies were like this, like Valentine's Day was like a horror theme or whatever, I'd be like, I'm good with it. Because sometimes I do get tired of like the sappy like chick flicks. But there's times where I just love those sappy chick flicks. And you've seen me.
Yeah.
And I devour those books. But at the same time, this was kind of like a change.
It really was, yeah. I mean, I think it might have even created its own genre. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I don't mean like literally.
No, yeah.
It's just what it did was it was almost alchemy.
Yeah.
Being a nerd. So yeah, I'd say get around to checking that one out. And so the reason why I wanted to rush through those two movies is this third one, the Oscar nominated Oscar nominated.
An Oscar.
Five-time Oscar winner.
Yeah, five-time Oscar winner.
Yeah.
For Best Picture.
Anora.
And Best Director.
We'll go through all of them afterwards, but...
Anora, a young escort from Brooklyn meets and impulsively marries the son of a Russian oligarch. Once the news reaches Russia, her fairy tale is threatened as his parents set out to New York to get their marriage annulled.
Kick it off. What were your thoughts initially going into it?
She did a really good job at just portraying her character, not just Anora, which is her character's name, not just researching, but also like immersing herself in Brooklyn and learning the accent.
Yeah. And, if you guys haven't seen it, her accent is basically Harley Quinn.
Yeah. But like, think like Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think she did really well in her acting. I don't think there's anything that I saw with her that I didn't like. This movie was it had its funny parts. I'm not going to lie. But I think it was just like certain scenes, but I don't know. I didn't like the guy she married though.
No, of course not. I mean, I don't think you were supposed to. So, you know, to get all the like the nitty stuff out of the way, it was made off of a $6 million budget.
With only 40 crew members.
That's tiny.
Literally the like a small production.
And to win 5 Oscars from that. That's awesome. I think we might have said it on a previous episode or any other discussions. Like, I really love that even today in this era of Marvel and DC and, you know, giant companies, that there's still these indie filmmakers that are making things that are getting highly recognized and making people continue to enjoy movies and, you know, but still creating this new style all the same.
But not only that, the director also edited this movie.
That's crazy.
That's how small this thing was.
Yeah.
And I think even in like his acceptance speech, he's like, who let the director edit this movie as a joke?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait, who are you? Forgot who you were. But just goes to show that if you really like have a passion for something, it shows.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I know when we covered Wicked, we mentioned that. There was a few other ones, but it's one of the things about doing this podcast is like, I know we're going to cover these, you know, obvious mainstream movies and you can hear it in our voices all the same where we're like, yeah, it's cool as whatever as a movie is shiny and a lot of colors and explosions and things. But then like you'll hear us perk up when we see or recognize the passion and care and detail put into projects.
Mm-hmm.
So Mikey Mattson, if you're not familiar and if you're following us and listening to us, I would imagine you guys are movie lovers, cinephiles as well. You would have seen Mikey Mattson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I forgot that she was in the Scream requels. That's two people in Scream that we're covering.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's the partial through line.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, she gets hit with the soup can or something.
No. Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Scream.
No. It would be funny if in Scream she also gets hit by a soup can.
Brad Pitt chucks that shit. One of my favorite scenes in that movie. But you mentioned the director and editor and writer, Sean Baker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with any of his other works, but I didn't know what to expect going into this film. And maybe if I would have seen some of his other stuff, I would have had an idea of what to expect because it wasn't a traditionally told story. which was interesting. But because of that, in his acceptance speech for the Oscars for Best Picture, he, in essence, said, you know, he's talking about the way you should view movies in theaters. He wants other directors and filmmakers to push the audience to go see movies in theaters, which is something that we've been trying to do as well. All that being said, though, we watched this movie at home, mainly because it didn't fit in our schedule to actually find a showing to go see it in theaters. We were watching a couple of other movies, and that kind of got in the way because this one didn't hit our radar. A lot of time that's my fault because I'm like, oh, this one looks artsy.
Yeah, and I think this movie was one that I wanted to see, but I think it came out in like November or something. Mm. So with like Thanksgiving and Wicked and Gladiator and all the other movies, and there was like a crap ton of movies that were coming out towards the end of the year.
There really was, yeah.
And I could not, like, there was...
There's no keeping track.
It was, since it was kind of like a limited release in a way, it didn't fit our schedule, which I kind of hate that, like, with limited releases... I want them to have more time slots, at least a little bit more, or at least, you know, do half morning, half night, because there's a lot.
Well, okay, so it's a neon film, yeah. So I know they would help them with distribution, but mm-hmm. all the same while, it's like, it's a $6 million budget. How much of that is actually going to promotions and distribution?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But the reason why I bring up the whole thing of like, that we saw it at home, it's been one of the few movies that we... covered. I think we covered Maria, we saw it at home. Amelia Perez, we saw it at home.
Well, those were mostly Netflix kind of things.
Correct, but yeah. Still, like, we all the same, we saw it at home, and those movies were pretty much straightforward, traditionally told stories. But this one was so not the norm that my focus was kind of pulled away at times, and I think if I were to have seen it in an actual theater... where I'm forced to sit in the dark and quiet with my phone down, and I, you know, I'm not going to turn to Alva and comment mm-hmm. openly about stuff, and my eyes and ears are just open to receive this movie, that I would have seen all of the subtleties of this movie. And Jesus Christ, I didn't realize, like, the movie, the storytelling was actually in the subtleties, because how this movie's acted is more on the, like, naturalistic side.
Mm-hmm.
So... no, none of the characters are going to stop at a window and, you know, the head down, turn, yeah, and just give this like 6-page monologue or anything like mm-mm. that. So it's not that type of movie. It's in the little, you know, micro expressions, which is acting. So it's so complicated, which is why Mikey Madsen absolutely earned leading actress, the Oscar for leading actress.
Best actress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the fact that such a... like how you said earlier, like it's the acting, like it brings it back to acting where it's in a way theater. When you go to see a play or something, you rely on their acting, and that's what it felt like. But the only thing, it was like that in a movie form. I don't think there was anything in their acting that I didn't like. I think all the characters that were playing, whether it be a small role or a big role or whatever, mm-hmm. they hit all those marks. To where it's like, did that actually happen to them? Because they're really playing it well.
Right.
Instead of just like something happened or like, you know, not fine 1 second, and then the next second they're like, I'm okay in the next scene.
So here's why this movie kind of threw me off though. Well, so one, acting was in the subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't know what to expect, as it's going on, I'm like, you know, when's it going to kick in? Because the first act really sets up the party scene. It sets up the characters, you know, sets up Honora that she's a sex worker. She's a you know, dancer. And then she meets this guy, as we mentioned in the synopsis. So it sets all that up. Right. And then they go into like then they hang out and then there's this whole party. Basically it's mostly montage. And there's, when you have a montage, you don't really have chances to, you know, tell a deeper emotional story. And I was like already judging the movie from the first act and definitely into the second act, where, you know, shit then goes down. Then it kind of turns into a screwball comedy is basically what I found mm-hmm. the word was for it. Because it was silly. And we were laughing at it. And, it's meant for you to laugh at it. But all the same, I was like, yeah, but where's the emotional weight? I'm not seeing it. I'm not feeling it. I see the situation going down. I get it. And then the movie lands a plane with a third act and it has its resolution. But it's all the same thing. I'm like, yeah, but nobody grew. Nobody learned anything. Nobody grew. And then the final 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the very end of the fucking movie, like a punchline to a long joke. Not to say that the movie was a joke, but, you know, you have those really long setups of a joke and then it all makes sense at the final line or two lines. And that's what this movie was. It all was hinging on that final scene, which was such a punch in the heart. It was a gut punch because it reveals, no, she was feeling things. She was going through a lot emotionally, intellectually, trauma-wise. Mm-hmm. And she was able to express that in those final moments of the movie. And it made the rest of the movie make so much sense why there wasn't a lot of emotion with her, why she reacted the way she did in so many of those situations.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I feel for you that you miss those things as like the second act was going on. Mm. Because you remember how those scenes where she's kind of interacting or whatever, screaming and stuff. You can tell with those are the subtleties that you're missing. You think she's just being like overdramatic and stuff like that. But like once you like set yourself aside from like being overdramatic, you can see how maybe a glimpse of her life, how she's acting right away because of that. Maybe that's happened to her before because of her job.
Right.
Or maybe it's happened to her because of her family life. And it just adds on to where it's the final end. And instead of like it being the punchline, it's like, oh, I get it. I understand her 100% more. I loved how Sean Baker did that because he said in interviews, he goes, I want this to be an interpretation to the audience. Like you interpret how you want it to be. And it's exactly how that is. Because I see some TikToks where sex workers are talking about this movie and they're like, I've never resonated with anything more than with this movie. And then there's other people who have maybe like certain parts of their life they've resonated to this, and I've seen videos and stuff like that. But not only that, but it's just like how much this movie had of a controversy for not using intimacy coordinator and stuff like that. But the fact that they were all trusting each other not to to use it, like it showed. Because not only I saw an interview with Mikey Madison. Madison.
I know, I keep getting it wrong. poor thing. She's going to be big.
Yeah. Where they're talking about the last scene and how the director, she needed to get those big emotions out that she had to use. Like, she's like, well, what's in my back pocket? What do I have? Because I know she even said it, like, every actor has something in the back pocket to get that big emotion, that big thing. And then the fact where she goes like, yeah, no, me and Sean were really trying. It took 4 days for this. And the frustration that you see in that last scene is the actual frustration that she was feeling on top of having one of those things that she had in her back pocket. Like, I think it was a voicemail from her dad or something. And the fact that, like, not only that, but Sean Baker was in the back seat, like, literally hiding, you know?
A small car, by the way.
Yeah, and I think that shows because regardless of them not having an intimacy coordinator, the fact that they had so much communication with all, especially that last scene with all three of them, it shows how much of like adults they can be. Because a reminder, intimacy coordinators are new to the industry.
Hmm.
So for them to have such confidence in just talking about that.
And open, like, communication.
All the communication to have this movie and not only show by winning 5 Oscars, but like by having the message right in front of your face, and you just need to look at the subtleties of it. Because life isn't really much about like the boom, it's right in your face. It's right. The subtleties of everything. Yep. The fact that they portrayed that in a movie, it's amazing.
Yeah. You know, for those who've been in long-term relationships can relate to that too, as far as like, you know, it isn't what you're saying, it's what you're not saying.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Which is why this movie was nominated for so many, a variety of award academies and everything, institutions 193 nominations and 75 wins. Again, 5 Oscar wins. What were they again? They were screenplay, best director, best picture, best leading actress, editing, right?
Yeah, editing.
Yeah. I'm missing another one, but it rightfully took the Oscars by storm. And I think that everyone should check this movie out, because I do, especially those who like those sort of like thinker movies, I want to see what everyone's thought is on this. You know, it isn't straightforward like a Paddington movie or Hard Eyes, but I'm a little bit of a thinker. And I really do want to hear what everyone, what it has to say about it, because I was sitting with it for so long and we were done watching. And I'm like, I don't know how to put this thing into words. It just like, it took me, and then it marinated and started to slowly click. I'm obviously the dumber of the two, so. No,
but like also.
I laughed too hard. Oh,
sorry. Ha ha. No, but like also, I also appreciate how throughout all this, all those wins and all the interviews and everything, that even prior to winning and all these nominations and stuff, not just always thanking the director, you know how you always like, oh, I thank so-and-so director, I thank my cast or whatever, but also the fact that they acknowledge these sex workers.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they had talked to them to see, because it is so important to how they could portray it. Because I felt like if they Hollywood that part, like the one where I think Jennifer Lopez and Cardi B or whatever won it, I don't think that would have worked. Then this one was, it's fine. And this one was like more realistic to what you would see. And the fact that they...
I wouldn't know.
It's okay. The fact that they would thank them over and over again, it like made it more like, no, they actually, whatever resources they had, whatever, especially now finding out that it was only $60 million.
That's crazy.
It's like...
That's fucking crazy. Yeah, so watch that, which means we're going to move on to our next segment of the show that we call... YHST gets fresh. Ooh. And of course, this is a segment of the show where every other episode, Alva and I go back and forth and alternating on who, giving our personal rating, critic rating, and audience score on Rotten Tomatoes from 0 to 100, 59 and below being rotten and 16 above being fresh. I think it's my turn give it. I forgot the whole script for a second. Jesus Christ. It's a lot to say. It's a mouthful, as she said. Okay, so starting off with Paddington in Peru, I personally give that movie a 65. I think that the critics may have given it a 60, and I think that audiences gave it a 70.
Okay, you're totally wrong there. 93 for critics.
No 91 shit.
For audience.
Super off.
Yeah. Wow. You are completely off. This is a really good movie. I'm not lying about that.
You know, we've been doing this for a while, and I've...
You've never been so wrong until right now.
She's just like living in the moment. Hard Eyes. Moving on to Hard Eyes. I personally give that one a 69% because I wanted it to be funny. I think that critics gave it a 65 and audiences gave it a 75%.
You're also wrong.
No shit.
Critics gave it an 80.
What?
Fuck. Audience gave it a 78.
Let's close with the audience. Damn it. Well, hell's bells. Mm-hmm. All right, then moving on to Nora. I feel like I'm going to be wrong on this one, too. I personally give that one a 75, and now that we were talking about it, I probably want to give it higher, but I'm sticking with the thing I wrote down. 75%, critics 85%, and audience 70%.
All right, critics 93, audience 89. You're way off on these.
I didn't give a lot of credit to the audience on that one. Jeez whiz.
I'm not lying when, like, was it one of our friend's brothers was like, oh my God, did you see this movie? I was like, no, but it's on my list. Don't give me anything.
Man, I'm really rusty on another edition of YHST Gets Fresh. Boop, 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 boop. I'm rotten.
Yeah.
From the outside in.
To the core.
Then let's just go ahead and move. Again, we're not going to have trivia today. We're just going to kind of cover some of the Oscars, which we watched earlier today. We live streamed that. We might do that again. Mm-hmm. Maybe for the Oscars only, because the setup is a pain in the ass.
So first I want to kick it off with with our bet that we had.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I won the bet. So he next show.
So I continue doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. So he has to edit and everything. Yeah. So I won.
We were, because our bet was contingent on the top, the big top five. Yeah. The big five, they call it, which is best screenplay, best leading actor, best leading actress, Best Director and Best Picture, but because the only difference in our choices was screenplay, which I chose Real Pain and she chose Brutalist, Anora ended up winning. We chose the same thing for leading actor, actress, director, and picture. We got that was wrong, so we were like, shit. Well, we gotta have some tiebreakers. So we did. We decided to go for production design, which Alva got it correct.
Wicked.
I lost with Nosferatu. I won that one, the best sound.
With Dune.
Dune Part 2. She lost her choice of Complete Unknown. Mm-hmm. And then best animation, she won with Flow. I really wanted a Wild Robot to win. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Flow. It is on our list as I write it down now.
And just to highlight, if you did watch the Oscars, go back and see when Flow won. They actually had the cats from the movie holding the Oscar, which cute. I found it being adorable. Aria, yes, a cat was holding an Oscar because your head popped up.
I'm the only cat here.
Yeah.
So Conan O'Brien hosted the thing.
Amazing. Okay. Amazing.
Can we get that guy to regularly do it? He's not doing anything else. Poor guy. Conan O'Brien needs a friend. Conan O'Brien needs a gig. And he got one. And I think it's in the form of the Oscars. Because Billy Crystal used to be the guy that was doing it often back in the day.
The opening act was amazing. It was...
Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo.
Yeah. They she did, was it...
Somewhere
Over the Rainbow.
Going into Defying Gravity. I got you.
Amazing.
Beyond amazing. They were stunning. The visuals are cool. They sounded great. They looked great. Everyone, by the way, just in a nutshell, everybody was dressed to the fucking nines.
Yes. Also, Conan O'Brien's like opening scene where he's kind of makes a reference to the substance.
Reference to the substance.
He's basically coming out of Demi Moore. Everyone has seen clips of this so already.
Brutal.
Yeah.
he like climbed back in because they get his keys.
Shoe.
Yeah,
shoe. The fact that he had a hole in his sock was amazing.
Oh my God,
just made it more so realistic. Good. Like, oh, you have holes in your sock too.
That was so good.
No, but the there's a one scene where Conan O'Brien is singing to the "I Won't Waste Time."
Yeah, that was good.
And he had very all the Conan. Actors with like golden hair.
Yeah, it's very very Conan. Oh, and like as far as his you know, the sort of thing people usually do in these award ceremonies is roast the nominees and roast other people. And we saw how that went with Chris Rock and Will Smith. But this one, like, of the people to do it, it was Conan. No one got slapped. Mm-hmm. Although
Drake might have got verbally smacked.
Oh, Drake got fucking verbally. Yeah.
He's been getting smacked around every way possible.
I heard he likes
every
it that
language,
way.
Too.
I heard he likes it that way. I said.
He says, I said. I said.
But there was at least like that one and a few other jokes that were pretty, like that was a heavy roast. The only heavy-ish roast as far as it being directed towards someone that was there was Conan making fun of Carla Sofia Gascon for kind of the things that she has said, as she has tweeted about in the past.
He went hard on that one. Yeah, but like,
it was
like,
fucking so.
It was like hard funny where it's like, he knows exactly how to word it to where it's comedy, but that person knows I am getting roasted right now and there is no way I'm getting out of this.
No, at all. And they just need to take their lickings and keep on tickings. But he did really good. He typical Conan. If anyone's a big fan of Conan, they know what to expect, where it's like self-referential. He's yet doing what he's doing. He's great with the crowd. Did not miss at all. Looked great in his suit. I think when he switched over to blue, like it really brought out his beady blue eyes as far as his copper top.
Even the dancers that were there.
Hey, did you hear that one of the dancers was a Taylor Swift's dancer?
From Aristotle? There was like five of them there.
I bet you didn't know that.
I did know that.
Just taking...
Jan
taking
was there, man. No one misses Jan.
I know Jan was there. You don't have to tell me Jan was there, okay? Boar, Jan.
Get out of there.
Oh, but the first presenter, by the way, which was super cool, was RDJ. Mm-hmm. God, that guy is just really fucking charming. And
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, the way that he, the way that he was, he introduced the nominees instead of going like, these are the nominees. Like the way he goes, he kind of like introduced the nominees. And of course, there was the actor who played Igor and Anora. He was like the first one he said, he's like, welcome. Like, he basically welcomed him.
So cool. That's That's class, dude.
And the fact that he went through like all of them and like he had something nice to say and stuff, and just like it was either like, I worked with you before, I love your work, thank you for being, you know, whatever it was. And I'm just like, this is, like, it was nice. It was a refreshing way to like announce nominees.
Everyone was just a class act. And I love those moments when they kind of went through some of the nominees and gave everyone their respective flowers, you know, just some proper recognition. Cause there was, other than anyone that was part of fucking Emilia Perez, other than that, everyone was fantastic in all their roles and most of the movies that I've seen. But I, you know, to kind of cover it real quick, I'm just fucking annoyed that Emilia Perez won anything after we had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like two things, right?
Remember, we watched the Golden Globes and we're like, wow, this Emilia Perez. And we saw it and we're like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yep. There were other people that deserved those Oscars. And
definitely.
What a shit show that was.
Also, shit. I was not expecting Andrew Garfield to make me tear up when he was basically thanking Goldie Hawn in behalf of his mom for like all the memories and stuff. Like, I was like, girl, I'm about to cry. Can you just stop? Just put on your glasses and look sexy there. Like, it's fine. You make us cry later.
Everyone looked great. Andrew Garfield was wonderful. Yeah, the first presenter was RDJ. He brought out the supporting male actor, and that winner was Kieran Culkin for A Real Pain. God damn, do I love Kieran Culkin and his speeches and his like sporadic minds and how fucking charming he is, and every little quick thing he's saying off the top of his head is just so fucking perfect and
he'll
funny.
He'll soon have four kids, but you know, that's because he won the Oscar, but that's fine. I mean, he won all the awards right across, like all these awards that were going on from like Golden Globes to this one, all in between. I think he won Best Supporting for all of them.
Apparently, the thing, he told a story, and I was surprised they didn't like play him off. He was like the only person they didn't play off. Everyone else, like Adrian Brody's like, no, I've done this before. Cut the music. I'll wrap it up. But Kieran Culkin told the story where his wife basically promised him four kids if he ever wins an Oscar.
It was three, and then he's like, oh wait, I just won the Oscar. It was four.
So, you know, that was just wonderful. That guy seems like a blast. I would like to hang out with him one of these days. So Kieran Culkin, if you're watching this or listening to this, come on over to the podcast. Oh my God, imagine if he did. God, I would vomit.
Can you like handle his like ADHD-ness?
Yeah. Okay. Dude, the one thing that I've not been properly diagnosed ADHD, but like when I talk to other people, I'm like, oh, I'm really clicking with these people. Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh, by the way, I've been diagnosed with ADHD. I was like, ah, shit.
Until they start talking like fucking all fast like I do. You're like, what did you just say? I was like, you didn't hear me?
No, well, like a lot of people that I talk with where I click with them, they know what they have. And so they've been sitting with the comfort of it and know how to like construct their thoughts and then bounce around. It's just so much fun talking with them. So I think I would be able to handle Kieran Culkin's energy. It's just like a cup of coffee.
I feel like we would just make friendship bracelets and I'd be like, here's some for your kids. There you go.
What else do you want to cover before we wrap up the episode?
Ben Stiller did a great job at doing giving the award for production design.
Hilarious.
Which that one went to Wicked, as it should, because that thing was built.
Yes.
That's basically like its own little
she
city.
She would know.
Yeah. With, was it like 9 million tulips?
Tulips.
Yeah. Amazing. If it didn't win that, I would have thrown my shoe at the TV.
And then Conan calling out Adam Sandler for wearing what Adam Sandler usually wears,
which is
a hoodie and basketball shorts. That whole bit was hilarious. There was a moment where they cut quickly to Conan, and like Conan's just letting Adam Sandler do his thing. But I don't know if you saw it, but Conan was like looking at his friend, because they're neighbors basically, and he's looking at his friend in like an endearing way, and it was so sweet for people in this industry to be friends. Because if you don't know, Conan on his podcast has talked about Adam Sandler, where Sandler would, on his regular walks, if he ever approaches Conan's gate, he'll just yell, "Coney, Coney!" want to be their neighbors? Can we move there?
I'd be like, Sandler, can I borrow your pants or the sweater? Because like, I don't want to do laundry. He'd probably be like, yeah, go ahead. I don't know. I could just feel, he looks like he just dresses very comfortable and like doesn't care how he looks. Like he's just like there. And I would like to live in that comfort zone. Like just, you know.
Another notable thing was the recognition for, you know, we covered it in the news about, you know, Amazon taking over the James Bond franchise. And I forget the three, it was Doja Cat, her, and
Doja Cat. No, it was Doja Cat, Ray, and
a third person I'm forgetting, but they did their covers of most of the a lot of, not most of, because yeah. Jesus, there's so many fucking James Bond movies, but a lot of the James Bond theme songs.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. It was such a classy performance that I enjoyed a lot.
Oh, yeah. I did like Queen Latifah getting the...
oh, my God. That was fun.
Oh, what's it called?
For the Wiz.
Yeah, like the recognition for it. But there's like a name for that. Like,
oh, darn. I forget. Yeah.
I forgot the name. And if it comes back, I'll just post it on the
story. You were, out of everyone that came, like me, I was like, oh my God, Conan O'Brien, and just enjoyed it when he popped up. And much like with the Golden Globes with Nikki Glaser, like it was a perfect balance of the host in the beginning and then lightly sprinkling them until it, you know, they peter out and close out the show. So it was like perfectly done. But Alva, she's like, what? Queen Latifah? Oh my God. Shut up. And she looked wonderful. Oh. She was great. Was she presented by Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah?
Yeah. She pays tribute to Quincy Jones.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We lost Quincy Jones.
Yeah. But that was such a great, like, just performance. All the performances, whether it was like musical or like a comedy bit or whatever, I enjoyed it so much more, like the musical part, because I know like those have more work that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I told him to shut up while she was on there because I just loved it.
Rightfully so, man. That, and they played the show out into the commercial. It was so much fun.
I love it. Yeah. Quentin Tarantino was there. Oh, yeah. That was, dude, out of nowhere.
Everyone's reaction was so fucking funny because they're like, everyone knows Quentin Tarantino is a zany, weird guy, you know? And although he didn't have like a big speech or nothing like that, and it was just like the way that he does stuff is funny. And, you know, people like laughing at the wrong spots just because he's a weird guy. I didn't expect it. It was still enjoyable. It was fucking funny and weird.
But yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Lisa,
okay.
Lisa was a third one for the Bond. That's it.
Again, my own personal thing, other than anyone winning that was part of Emilia Perez, I think everyone else earned their fucking keep. And I think we added at least, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies that we have to catch up on.
It'd be 6. I don't know. I added another one in there.
That was, you know, mentioned or nominated in the 97th Academy Award. Mm. So we're definitely going to do this again next year. What did we play? We played Oscar Bingo, by the way.
And you won that one.
I did. But you were taking the lead for a minute, but
yeah.
It was pretty fun. Like, you had found an Oscar Bingo card, and I'm like, where's mine? You're like, I didn't find a variation on it.
Yeah, there was only like one. I'm like, no, I need more than one. Yeah. I wish I would have won Bingo, but I won the best one ever. So I am good.
Yeah, we'll have to make it a drinking game next time. So wrapping the show up again, Paddington, watch it with the kids. You'll enjoy it. Hard Eyes, if you like slasher films, see it. And then Anora, I absolutely implore people to go check this one out. And I really do want to have a discussion with folks about this one. So, you know, comment, DM, message us, please. I want to get everyone's views, personal views on this. Were you sitting with me where it was a slow simmer, had a marinate in it? Or were you like Alva, who was sharp to all this shit and caught on immediately? So let us know next week. But for now, anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, eat your veggies.
What is
don't
that?
Get the flu. Stay away from sick people.
Jesus, I know, right? Man, we have some movies to catch up on. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've been having fun doing this, so let's continue to do what we do best. And thank everybody for joining us on yet another episode of You Haven't Seen That, or YHSD for short. And again, if you like what we do, please reach out to us on social media.
On YHSD Pod.
And support us on Venmo.
At YHSD Pod.
Yeah, and we're not putting out video episodes or anything like that, but we still have abbreviated versions of our reviews that we call
YHSD Snacks
that you can view on Instagram, on TikTok, and on YouTube at
YHSD Pod.
Look at that. YHSD Pod everywhere across
made it
the board.
Simple for you guys.
There you go. So help support us. Comment, like, share, follow, hit the notification bells. Do all of those things to help us provide this show to you. We highly appreciate it. We want to continue doing this. We want to continue to making it fun and bring this filmic community together. So thank you guys for letting us do this thing and letting us be your silly movie reviewers. Alrighty. Till next time, let us know what movies you're excited to see that are on your growing list of films that has people asking you the question, you haven't seen that? Adios, folks. Till next week. Thank you.